Hey, what's going on? Greetings and good day, and welcome to Birds All Day, episode number 206. My name is Drew Fairservice, and this is your official, with a capital O, season preview for your Toronto Blue Jays. Which is to say, we'll kind of kick around some news and some banter, and then we'll be like, hey, what do you think about the season? And then we'll have nothing definitive to say. This is the show, 206 episodes deep. You know what you're getting at this point. So as I said, my name is Drew Fairservice, and joining me as always...
Old Reliable,
Mr. Andrew Stoughton. Stoughton, how are you?
Doing all right.
All right.
I am oldly reliably all right.
I am reliably old. So it we have quite the dichotomy. Yeah. Quite the, you know... It's a lively mix. We've got our patterns. We agree on everything, which is what people are looking for. Takes, conflict.
Yeah.
We got it all. The straight man, the live wire. But no. Anyway, people know what they're after. They know what they're in for. So yeah, so as I said, we're recording this on Wednesday instead of the usual recording of on Thursday because tomorrow is the opening day. Your Toronto Blue Jays will be taking on your Detroit Tigers in a game that one team has to win. So that's exciting. Mark Stroman on the hill for the Blue Jays. I have no idea who's pitching for the Tigers. I know that Michael Fulmer's out for the year. I know that Daniel Norris did not make the Tigers rotation. So things are going swimmingly there in Motown. You're going to tell me who's starting for the Tigers now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. But then it can't be right. Seems to say Spencer Turnbull.
What?
Yeah.
I thought...
This is...
Judging by the way you were going through this, I was like, you were going to say Matt Boyd, and I was going to be like, oh, the one that got away.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, no, it's probably Jordan Zimmermann.
I was going to guess Zimmermann, but... oh, no. Oh, good. Oh, thank God. Yeah, no, I've confused the headline. He's going to... What did I say? Roscoe something or other? I don't even know who the hell this guy is. Spencer Turnbull. He's going to start at Comerica on the home opener. So I think it is Zimmermann. That was terrifying. Because I know the Tigers are bad, but...
If ever there was a default, attrition-based opening day starter, it's Jordan Zimmermann in 2019. But anyway, Speaking of attrition... The Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, your Toronto Blue Jays and mine, have demonstrated beyond any shadow of a doubt that there is a price to pay for a roster spot, and that price is significant, as today they freed up a roster spot by trading Kendrys Morales, DH extraordinaire, Vlad Whisperer, Lourdes Gurriel groomer, a guy who had a very, very nice year in the end last year after looking like he literally could not hit anymore. He's gone. He's in Oakland A. They are dealing with injuries on their own. Matt Olson is out with a hamate injury, so apparently Kendrys is going to get a lot of time at first base. Maybe do some DH platooning with... Oh, no, Chris Davis is their DH because he cannot field at all. That's the state of affairs in Oakland, where Chris Davis is so bad in the field that they'd rather have Kendrys Morales wear a glove every day for a while. But anyway, Kendrys is going to Oakland, as well as most of his salaries being paid by the Blue Jays, and they have received a... something. What's his name? Jesus Lopez?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
International
bonus in the pool cap. Money, yeah.
Yeah, that's not nothing.
No, and they get a roster spot freed up. So, you know, and that I think is obviously the biggest prize, which, I mean, they could have done that by just releasing Morales, but they've sent him to a contender.
I tried to say that with a straight face, and I had a difficult time accomplishing that feat.
Yeah.
I don't...
You're not buying the A's? I mean, they're Blue Jays West. They got Marco Estrada now. Everybody's favorite, fan favorite, Kendrys Morales. Definitely not a guy who... I've just seen somebody like, oh, the Blue Jays were talking about how they need Vlad to be a good teammate, and they're sending this guy packing. The front office can't even get out of its own way. It's like, you know, are you for fucking real... people
even you the straw man that you've created, to which is a composite of a bunch of different clowns on Twitter, I'm sure, They can't believe both parts of those statements, right? Yeah. The Blue Jays don't believe that. I said on Twitter, and is that though that veteran presence is worth having when someone else is paying for it. If the Blue Jays want to pay for his whole salary, the A's are like, come on in. We would love your veteran presence. If they had to pay for it, they wouldn't. They don't want it. It's not worth that much. It's not that worth that much to the Blue Jays. It's worth way more having that roster spot for flexibility. So the immediate reaction that I saw was that, oh, this means Rowdy Tellez is going to be up. Rowdy, of course, did not make the team out of spring. He was, I don't know, optioned back to the minors or whatever his assigned to Buffalo. I'm not sure what his roster status was. So the assumption is that now Rowdy will come up and do that job. I don't think that's going to happen at all.
No. Well, it's already, I mean, I think it's already been said that Anthony Alford's taking the spot.
Oh, it has been. Okay, I didn't even see that. I'm surprised by that as well, because I thought they would use it for a pitcher to hide
Elvis,
the team.
Yeah, Elvis Luciano.
Elvis Luciano, who made the team as a Rule 5. The Blue Jays not willing to relinquish his rights and hand him back to... where did he even come from? I don't remember what team he... what club they were selected him from.
The Kansas City Royals, so barely a club. I don't think you can feel bad about forgetting about their existence.
They have the... it's interesting that an expansion team would have a Rule 5 guy. A team playing their first season in the big leagues, as Kansas City looks forward to in 2019. That's surprising, Anthony Alford. Okay, I will be surprised. Well, we've spoken of in glowing terms of Willy Cañate before, the guy that the Blue Jays hid in 1993 at the end of the bench. And I thought maybe they would go that route with Elvis Luciano, but it appears that they well.
Well, they still. I mean, they have 13 pitchers, so.
Why not have more?
With only a 24-man roster, given that one guy just basically cannot be there or is not going to... it's going to be tough to get him into spots where he can be successful. I understand the impulse. And, Alford is probably just a placeholder until Vlad comes up anyway, right? As the pitcher would be.
That's true. As it stands... We saw the Blue Jays using Billy McKinney at first base a little bit in spring. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a guy that, depending on the kind of, if you're looking to maximize the amount of right-handed bats in the lineup with Teoscar Hernandez going to DH, that means suddenly Billy McKinney's playing left, starting against lefties, which probably is suboptimal. So having Alford in the mix, it's just good to see Anthony Alford will have a chance. You have to assume, I'm kind of making up my mind as I go here, but A, it's good that Anthony Alford is in the big leagues. B, if he is in the big leagues and they have, this is the decision they went with, it means that they presumably want him to play or will ensure that he plays, because that's the thing with Anthony Alford, right? He needs reps. He needs opportunities to play and prove he can hit at the big league level and prove he can play, stay healthy. Hey, if he's on the bench, he's probably going to be healthy there, but that's not asset management as we know to be the priority in these parts, is it?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, maybe he'll cut into Kevin Pillar's at-bats a little bit here. Randall Grichuk, maybe him too, but Pillar seems to be the guy who, now that Morales is gone, makes the least sense on the roster. So, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. It's possible. I said I think he's going to go down when Vlad comes up. It's possible. Maybe is it Urania who made the team, or instead of Sogard, who could end up going down? I think he's on there. I should know this, frankly. With Lourdes Gurriel as your backup shortstop, you maybe don't need that guy. But it seems like since that is the case already, they probably don't agree and think that they need a more proper infielder who can be behind there. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Alfred sticks around longer. I think it would be good. I think they obviously love him as a teammate and as a guy in the room, but he certainly hasn't quite yet hit his way onto the big league club, something we've talked about a lot. So you're right, he needs reps, and hopefully that means he gets them here. And, there was that big moment in spring where he had a couple home runs in a couple games or something like that. Looked good. He had a good spring, but I think it tapered off a little bit at the end. But spring training, let's I don't know what the hell. Going to get the Detroit Tigers' shitty pitching staff this weekend, at least. So that should give anybody a chance.
Yeah. Oh, it's already. It's. I mean, Kevin Pillar is basically the veteran on the team now, right? I mean, who has more service time? Justin Smoak probably has the most service time of anybody on the club.
I would think so. Yeah.
Smoak, or I mean, Shoemaker doesn't have that much.
Yeah.
Bud Norris, yeah. So Bud Norris, is he not still in flux, or what's his situation?
It's he's still in flux, but I think it seems like he's going to be on the team at some point here. That might be they still have a 40-man spot, or they have a 40-man spot now open to somebody such as Bud Norris.
Or Javi Guerra is apparently in the mix.
Yeah.
Let's set aside the 40-man roster machinations, or the 25-man roster machinations for now. That is the next point on the rundown. The first thing we talk about is Kendys Morales. So, I mean, credit to Kendys Morales for helping the Blue Jays to make himself a viable enough candidate as someone who can be paid by your team to play for someone else. It did not look that way, 11 months ago, that he was going to be a guy who would have any value whatsoever, even if it was paying him to go and play for somebody else. So hopefully he continues and, hits like he has. He's a good hitter. He seemed like a good dude to be around. Everybody seemed to like him, the teammates. So it's good for him. And, anything that is going to allow the Blue Jays to put out a meaningful but also interesting lineup, I'm all for. And it's not that Kendrys Morales isn't interesting, but it means more time to watch Teoscar Hernandez do Teoscar Hernandez things, more time to learn of the things that Billy McKinney can do, and especially Anthony Alford. That's really exciting to me. Kevin Pillar obviously looks like a kind of guy who could be or would be traded at one point. And to his, he holds a key distinction in my mind. Somebody who has a name that is very hard to remember on Twitter, because it's like lots of numbers and stuff like that. He noted that the Blue Jays are getting real close to having more money paid to guys on other teams than that they're paying to their own.
Yeah, that's probably true.
He says that right now it's about $59.8 million on the Blue Jays roster, and $48.6 million is being paid elsewhere. So if Pillar, who's obviously got, what is he, 2 years from free agency?
He is, yeah.
He's further along in his arbitration. He's probably making more money than almost everybody else on the roster, disturbingly.
5.8. So yeah, he is now, with Kendrys gone, he's their fourth highest earner at $5.8 million. Well, their fourth highest earner on the roster. There are three others off the roster that earn more, of course.
If they're going to get close, they could maybe net themselves a serious return for Kevin Pillar by paying his full freight and really starting to nudge that value thing in the other way. So it's at that really that balance point. That's the payroll flexibility that everyone always talks about. It's the ability to pay equally to your team and other teams for the players that you at one time acquired. I don't know. What do you think? The bonus pool is not nothing, and I don't know anything about Jesus Lopez.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's like some prize, because if he was worth anything, somebody probably would have tried to get him from the A's for somebody other than Kendrys Morales. I mean, this is he's just sort of a warm body, I'm sure, to make the trade go, because I don't think you can just dump money. You have to actually take some sort of a player back.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's been nice to see, even though, it doesn't matter now, and it doesn't change the fact that he was pretty disappointing as a Blue Jay. It's been nice to see some of the tributes from teammates, some Pillar and Stroman talking about, how much, they really respected and enjoyed him in the clubhouse, and what a guy he was, even to the guys who, aren't Spanish-speaking players. And I think the Nicky Huffman, the trainer, has a nice thing about him, and Ryan Barucki's brother said that it was Kendrys who, like, figured out that Barucki had been tipping his change up last year against the Red Sox, and you know, that really helped him unlock a bit of his season, and he was that kind of guy. I think the thing when he was in Kansas City, I believe, was, you know, his reputation was that, like, you know, he would he'd come back after a game, and he'd have game plans for everybody. Like, he's just out there, you know, studying the game, loves the game, loves, you know, teaching and helping people, and as difficult as it was to watch him not be the kind of player that the Jays, I think, hoped, that was all you ever heard in the background, and it's tough because the team in the front office has such a PR problem that's like not a good enough thing to point to, and obviously they an acknowledgement of the fact that it's not good enough to make that much of a difference is the fact that they're getting rid of him here, despite the, you know, the Gurriel mentorship and the Guerrero mentorship and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's, you know, that's all true. That wasn't just like bullshit. I don't think it, he, you know, was as valuable as I suppose one can be in that kind of role, which is to say, valuable enough to pay the Oakland A's to play him.
It definitely seems. That is a luxury, a nice thing to have, and it's great to have that and have a player around young players to help guide them. But there's no substitute for getting a impediment out of the way so the young players can just play. And it's a bit of a luxury for a bad team to have. It's almost like a closer, like a traditional sense closer, where it's like it's always good to have good pitchers. But a guy whose main job is compiling saves isn't worth the investment. If you can get somebody else to pay him to do that, then just figure out what it is you've got back there. And I think that's kind of with Morales. Yeah, all those things that he does are awesome. And the team certainly has a, you know, guys who are like that are way more likely to continue to get jobs as opposed to a player who is maybe capable of producing slightly more, but taking away from the clubhouse atmosphere sort of thing. But it's not really a luxury that the Blue Jays need to afford. Obviously, they're comfortable with Gurriel and then Vlad Guerrero Jr. Fending for themselves, so to speak, or with each other and the rest of the culture that they've built, and with the manager, of course, in place, somebody who can help to shepherd these young guys along. You know, yeah, and it's sure that you pay him to play for the A's,
and you pay him to open up a lot more plate appearances for the guys you want to get plate appearances to, right? Yeah, like you say. Yeah, so I was working this out. I worked it out on Twitter, right? I mean, well, Alfred in the mix changes things a bit, but you know, it's just there was basically three or two spots for four players with left field and second base for McKinney and Teoscar, for Drury and for Gurriel. Basically, I mean, if you think about the rest of the roster, they were kind of locked in, and so freeing up a third spot is pretty big. It's you know, if for a year where, yeah, that's exactly your objective, is to see what McKinney does in 400 plate appearances, what Gurriel does, if these are guys you can, you know, pencil in to be regulars going forward, or you know, if you have to rethink that. And I don't know. It's just that's obviously the situation they're in. So, you know, yeah.
So this is the first, I mean, not the first, but this has been the theme of the offseason is having these more entrenched type of guys move on. And I think that we'll continue to see this happen as the regular season progresses, if it's Drury or whomever else, because there are still more spots to vacate. There's still the outfield to sort out, and Kevin Pillar is the known quantity that has earned a much more robust career than anyone ever would have expected, and now it might be time for him to take that career
elsewhere.
Well, he's a known commodity, and on a team that is full of unknown commodities, and the front office that seems bound and determined to determine what those commodities are. And that means that giving Anthony Alford every solitary, every last opportunity to prove or show who and what he can be, potentially Dalton Pompey, but maybe not so potentially. And then the rest of them with Grichuk and McKinney and Hernandez, all those sorts of guys. The infield is in a similar situation because you've got Vlad and you got Bo, and they're coming. One of them is coming before the other, but the other one won't be far behind.
It's starting to feel that way, isn't it, a little bit? I mean, I don't know. We talked all summer, all winter about, doing the same thing over with Vlad, or with Bo as we did with Vlad. But yeah, I don't know. I could see him up a lot sooner than a year from now, based on the way he's played, right?
Let's have this conversation now, then.
All right.
So, I know you wrote about this today, or yesterday, about the service time thing. So, Vlad's injury gave the Blue Jays the cover that they didn't need, as we've discussed before, and we've said up and down. They didn't need cover. They were going to do what they were going to do. And they still insist. Mark Shapiro has said it since, kind of not doubling down, but being like, his one tool is big league ready. We want him to be a great player and all blah, 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 blah. But around the league, there's two different kind of schools of thought we've seen with the other top three, two of the other remaining top three big prospects in baseball, which is Eloy Jimenez signs a 6-year, I think last week I said 24, it's actually $34 million with two options, and that'll get him on the big league roster for opening day. So that's one way to do it. And again, last week we were sort of like, yeah, this is cool, I guess. It's good that he's getting paid, but it'd be nice to see him recoup more value. And Rob Manfred's running his mouth today in the paper in the news about this shit. And in a way that I just wish he would just stop. But it's not his job to stop. It's his job to continue to push this narrative forward. But Jimenez got paid. He's going to be up. Fernando Tatis Jr., not paid on the opening day roster. The Padres, not so concerned with the service time manipulation, are putting their best foot forward. It's almost as though they spent $300 million on one player this offseason and really need to get it in gear now. And they also, the pitcher, I believe Chris Paddock is his name, a guy who they got from the Marlins in a Fernando Rodney trade, has taken a big leap forward and is ready to go on the opening day roster. So Padres not as concerned with the service time issue. What do you feel? Are there lessons for the Blue Jays to learn from here? The answer to that is, of course, no. but no, what do you think?
I admire and appreciate San Diego's model, for one, the fact that they're just going for it. They'd already sort of put the gears in motion last year when they signed Hosmer for so much money, right, obviously. And they're a team that, there are some comparison points, and this is basically what I wrote about between the Jays and the Padres. And, the Jays maybe could have tried a little harder to make something happen this winter. They had a better record than the Padres last year, I believe, or thereabouts. Whatever it was comparable, and as much as people love to point to the Red Sox and the Yankees, the Padres are not in exactly a division that is a cakewalk, even though, San Francisco being what they are right now is a bit of a gift. There had been them being in a down part of a cycle where they very often are not. I don't know. It's obviously something where they may think differently about what the CBA is going to do to free agency, because that's another factor that I don't think got talked about nearly enough in the Vlad stuff, is that, who the hell knows what free agency is going to look like after the CBA expires and the labor fucking Armageddon happens. It's entirely possible that, they're doing this for nothing, the Jays and the other teams that are manipulating service time. It takes two. You have to have the player be willing to sign it. And I think people rightly kind of have pointed out, there's maybe less incentive for a Vlad whose dad made so much money, and maybe a Bo Bichette as well, to sign what looks like that kind of a light extension like Eloy did. But, those kind of deals seem like a great option to have looked into a little more seriously, too. Maybe the Jays did, but obviously not seriously enough to get it done, but that would have been a wonderful way to just make this all a moot point and make fans feel good and get a real win out of it. And, you would love to see that with a Bichette, even if he comes up, mid-season. Just goddamn sign him up. Put all those questions to bed. And I think that, you know, I was tweeting about something. I retweeted something. I saw Eno was in on it and talking about how, you know, aging curves are showing now that players kind of come in what they're going to be and, you know, plateau a bit and then go down. It's not sort of the same. The aging curve just looks a little bit different now, and that's probably part of the calculation that the Padres are making as well, is that and that the Jays probably should be considering that, you know, age 28, 29, you know, some of the ages down the line that you're going to be worried about. I mean, maybe Vlad, it's a little bit earlier, but Bichette would be one there, is not as valuable as I think is still believed in the common perception.
Surely a player of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s physique shouldn't be concerned with downward trajectory of his career as he gets older. I mean, I think that maybe that is something to consider, that not only is any guy's age 20 season potentially worth more than his age 27 season, and if you're worried about a big dude aging, I don't, that's not an illegitimate concern in mm-hmm. in a way. Not to say that it's a big, not to say that he's,
you know,
going
we,
to be.
We hear you, Jeff Blair. We got, we, you know,
no, I'm so, I'm saying he's, it's not his size that makes him more injury prone, but, there just aren't that many, I guess there aren't that many guys who are built like that, who have been through baseball, and big pitchers have always done well. But I mean, the nature of the game and the kind of selection bias of that moves guys to the big leagues, there aren't that many touch points. And I don't know who's a big guy who with the kind of, anyway, maybe that's a stupid point. That's a stupid point. I will retract that point. It was
okay,
stupid.
Okay.
But
we're not above
the
that.
Bigger
that's,
point.
That's the birds all day difference. We will retract our points.
It was a stupid thing to say. I've said a stupid thing that had no basis in reality. The thing that does have basis in reality is, given what we know about the league now that you just said, is Vlad's age 20 season going to be that much worse or better than his age 27 season? We don't know. It's hard to say. The way the game is trending, it's a risk. There's a different kind of risk, right? Associated with that.
It does seem like it will obviously more fit the Blue Jays timeline than the Padres, if we're making that comparison, which I suspect we still are. But yeah, no, I think that's a genuine thought that's out there, and that hasn't been fully appreciated by some of the people who are aghast that San Diego would do a thing like this, because, you know, for so long people have been, you know, pushed into the for, you know, because followed the front offices basically down the Moneyball rabbit hole or down the Wall Street rabbit hole, right? And so when something happens that's slightly different, it can be jarring. But no, I don't know. I just credit to San Diego, which I rarely say, but it's nice to see a team want to win and try to win games and try to put the best team on the field, even if it's for those 15 extra days. That can make a difference.
And it's also, I mean, you're sending a pretty positive signal to your fan base that you do prioritize winning. And there are going to be the super clever guys with the 2002 version of the BP the BP annual sitting in front of them who will be like, well, this is stupid. You should get that extra year. But maybe it's worth winning a little bit of that PR battle. I mean, the one thing that when I was reading about the Eloy Jimenez extension was like that these conversations were going on with him for a year.
Which sort of, like, you know, I mean, why don't you tape one of those, decline the fucking extension, and be like, yeah, clearly they want me in the big leagues right now. They've been negotiating with me. Like, there's your grievance right there, is the fact that they're negotiating with you.
That's a good point. But
but apparently that's not how that works.
So, for me, the one thing I've always thought about the service time manipulation, A, it's obviously bad. And number one, it's bad because it's against the rules, and that's why they lie about it. The other thing is that there needs to be a real threshold. Like, there needs to be a reasonable threshold for players who meet that. And the thing that set me off about this was last year I saw some Royals fans being like, maybe, you know, Adelberto Mondesi shouldn't be up now. They should be down so they can get an extra year. And I was like, really? Him? Like, this is the kind of guy that you're willing to manipulate the service time for? And now maybe I have undersold Mondesi's, another legacy ball player. Maybe I've undersold his potential, as he did have a bit of an odd year. He hit a ton of home runs by the end of the year. But I don't know what side of the line I would put Bo Bichette on of
right.
that.
Right.
I mean, you're going to manipulate the service time of these sure bet kind of types and low risk guys that you know are going to, or that you have a really strong sense are going to make it and you're saving yourself money in the end. But if there's even any doubt, like, oh, well, maybe this guy will go down, like, those things will work themselves out. And I don't know that Bichette is quite on the one side of that ledger. He is obviously a talented and exciting and very easy guy to root for. And he's going to be a great player, or he's going to be a good player, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. But maybe there'll be some doubt. I mean, to assume that he's going to come into the big leagues and hit like gangbusters and whenever he shows up. Like, I think that's the thing with Vlad. It's like there's no doubt about it.
Yeah,
it's not a matter of, like, if it's when. But with Bo, you know, we've seen him sort of struggle at Double A, and it'll be interesting to see how he does when he hits the ground here in Triple A. Obviously, he's won a lot of fans in spring training because
his brother got to a certain. I was going to say his brother got to a certain, you know, a certain point as a prospect, was a big prospect in the Yankee system for a while, and then it fizzled. Not that that means a hell of a lot for Bo, but yeah, just to add to the list of reasons to be. To acknowledge that this is a different situation. Yeah.
Basically,
his defense too. I mean, it's weird because the lie of the Vlad stuff was, oh, worrying about his defense. But I think for Bichette, that is actually, like, I'm okay if they're like, yeah, he needs to keep playing shortstop in Buffalo for a while still, just to make sure he's ready for what he's going to face in the big leagues. I think that is easier to swallow than, hey, this future DH really needs to make sure he's got all his fundamentals at third base.
True. The last thing I will say about this, and then we'll move on to the season sort of preview-ish things, is if there's any doubt about the player's future, then there should be no reason to monkey with his service time at all. Because if it becomes an issue, if you're like, holy shit, I can't believe we let Bo Bichette become a Super 2, that extra pass through arbitration is going to kill us. And, oh, I can't believe he's going to be a free agency in 2024 instead of 2025, whatever it is. That is an incredibly good problem to have. That's true of anybody. But if there any way below the can't miss, for sure this guy is going to be a huge earner and a huge producer. So that's the kind of situation where as a team you need to try to save that money because they're slimy. Okay, but if there's any doubt, then I think you just let it ride. You just gamble and be like, bring him up. As soon as he looks the part, as soon as we have no doubt that he belongs up here, get him up. As soon as there's no doubt he belongs up there and there's a place for him to play. But there should be no other considerations because you just never know with the rest of it because the game is difficult. And maybe if it's, oh, we were really doing this for a guy who's like a nice player, but a second baseman, whatever. Let him go. Yeah. Let him play. Let them play. Yeah. Let the kids play. That's the MLB's fucking whole marketing thing right now is let the kids play. Here we are. Let them play. Bring them up. Do what the Padres do, which is always sound baseball advice. Do what the Padres do.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do the season. We'll talk about the season to come. So this is the stuff that we always talk about, the baseball adjacent type of topics.
Right.
You know, it's a lot. Well, no, never mind. I was going to say something. It's not. It's not like the Marvel movies, even though the Marvel movies are more about looking forward to what's going to happen as opposed to what you're actually watching. That's where we have been with baseball. Like, man, can't wait for 2018 to be over so we can be done with this bullshit year and on to the year when we get to watch Vo and Vlad. But that's where we are. And soon we'll be able to do that. But there's also fun things to look at. So, we're going to look at the season ahead. Again, this is what people come to you and I for, and they have for 206 episodes of this show, is hot takes, is bold positions. So, are you ready to teeter out on that ledge and just, like, come with that fire?
Yeah, I got my oatmeal right here.
I had a nice cup of soup. Put a couple of nice ice cubes in there to bring it down, so I could sip it safely.
Yeah.
All right. So who do you have? So you can. I've described this as dealer's choice. So you basically can pick your metric or the measurement. But I'm going to say who will be the most valuable pitcher on the Blue Jays this year.
Well, I think it's going to be Matt Shoemaker, because obviously, you know, we knew Stroman and Sanchez had to be good for them to make that second wild card. And then when they did, it was really about that third guy stepping up, and that's Matt Shoemaker.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I would say it's the most valuable pitcher would be, actually, it would be Matt Shoemaker.
For because, those exact same reasons, obviously.
No, obviously, because... Why? What is it that? What is the value? What is Matt Shoemaker's value proposition? It is returning assets at control years in trade. So if Matt Shoemaker will come out and pitch well, and then he will be traded for a complimentary piece, and that, my friends, is the true definition of value.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. And that will be very good too if he's good, and if Buckles is good. Then it's much easier to trade them, get some nice prospects, and then not worry as much about the fact that you're going to extend both Stroman and Sanchez, because we're pushing the timeline up. They're back. Stroche, as I like to call it, is back.
They're friends.
On
IG. It's Instagram official.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So that's huge. I mean, that's probably the biggest development of the winter for the Blue Jays. So now you can go out and cheaply extend both of them, because obviously free agency is broken, and they're going to want to cling to whatever money they can possibly get. And, you know, you get another couple years of those guys to anchor the rotation as your Baruckies, your Nate Pearsons, and whoever else is end up, you know, repopulating your rotation into something that's kind of resembles something strong. I don't know who the other ones are going to be, because I think there's a lot of guys they have that are starting right now that are going to be AAA starters or relievers, but you never know. Love to see Trent Thornton take a step forward too.
Trent Thornton, of course, who made the team as a number four starter.
For now, yeah.
For now. Number four starter for now. Put that in the back of your baseball card. The real answer is, of course, Marcus Stroman. Stroman, I expect big things from him in this year. I had a high expectations for him every year, because I am very high on Marcus Stroman. So I think I hope and think that he will come out and pitch well, and provided he's healthy, which I am hopeful that he'll make 30 starts and really be out there for a full season. He is soaking up innings and just looking like himself, which he, when you squint, as you are good at doing, can really see that he was pretty much the same guy last year, with a little bit of some bad luck and some bad defense and some mistimed poor execution.
Yeah.
And the other thing about extending Aaron Sanchez, I'd much prefer not.
He's back. Come on, he's back.
He has looked good, I guess, in spring training, which is important.
I mean, if we can't be optimistic about Aaron Sanchez coming out of spring training when he looks healthy and back, when can we be optimistic?
The time to be optimistic about Aaron Sanchez was in between 2015 and 2016.
Yeah, then he went out and won the American League ERA title.
Yeah, and then like a whole bunch of other things have happened since then.
Yeah, he got a blister, and then he got his finger tangled in a suitcase. He'll be fine. Comeback player of the year.
Comeback player of the year. All right, sounds good.
Why not? What the hell? I just put the Jays on the back of Matt Shoemaker into the wild card, so anything's possible.
Okay, now the next one. What I wanted to do, and I haven't been able to do it yet, is there's a part of me that thinks that by the end of the year, Marcus Stroman will be throwing harder than Aaron Sanchez, which would probably be pretty good. Right? That sounds like a good thing. Something for us all to root for.
Something to keep track of, yeah. We should do that in the season. We'll take their average fastball readings and follow them along. We can have a little graph.
I think that's harder
to do in a non-visual medium, but we can make it.
We'll really paint the picture. It'd be some fucking Garrison Keillor shit all out here. The next question, again, dealer's choice. So you can pick the metric by which you are measuring the metric. It doesn't have to be a metric. It can be a feeling.
Okay.
Who is the hitter who will account for the most offensive production in the shape that you enjoy most?
Yeah. I mean, you got to pick Vlad, right? I mean, it's a long season. I don't think he's going to miss that much of it. So,
And by what measure are you attributing?
I'm attributing offensive production to, you know, offensive production. He's going to be their best offensive player. You know,
I don't think
the hitting and the walking and the home runs.
I don't think it's inconceivable for him to lead the team in all rate stats. Hit for the highest average and have the highest OBP and slug the highest. I think that whether or not he will hit more home runs than like Justin Smoke, I wouldn't make that bet right now.
Yeah.
Just based on playing time and he obviously he has tons of power, but he still has not yet fully shown that true home run stroke in the minor leagues.
Yeah, what a bump. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something to work on. They said your one tool is big league ready. I'm not convinced. I will say the most offensive production, I think, will be my choice is Teoscar Hernandez. And the measure of offensive production is outs on the bases. I am looking forward to, until Bo is here, someone needs to take up the mantle of insane base running. And watching those two games against the Brewers in Montreal, or watching this first one in particular, it's clearly just cooked into all of them. They've done a brilliant job of making them all maniacs.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith ran the bases like a stud. Bo Bichette, no hesitation whatsoever, going first to third, scoring on a infield single. Oh, Kevin Smith did that. He scored on like a roller to the first baseman. It was great.
Yeah.
And it will be fun. Now the Blue Jays have sort of shed the very old and mostly slow guys on their roster. So they're
just fucking shed another one.
They shed another one. They're running out of slow guys. Luckily, Smoke is slow enough for two or three.
yeah.
But I'm hoping to see that kind of base running from all of them. Every single one of them. If you're on the bases, run like you mean it. And we've talked about the Padres more in this episode than probably ever before. But that is one of my favorite teams. I think it was, I can never remember the year. But the Padres were bad and they were young. But they ran the bases like maniacs. Every single one of them. Will Myers had like 25 steals. They all just ran and ran and ran. And I hope the Blue Jays do that because fuck it. That's why. So Teoscar is going to be my out on the bases god in 2019.
Yeah. May I say something though here before we?
What's that?
Just because we were talking about Vlad and you're not quite convinced about the power he did.
Are you going to well actually me after looking up his Fangraphs page?
Well, yes, obviously. He had 20 home runs last year in 400 plate appearances, 29 doubles. His .636 slugging percentage was fourth in all of the minor leagues. That is out of 1,496 qualified hitters across all minor league levels.
Yeah, but that's propped up by his speed. You know, that's just legging out extra bases, and that's all. That's got all the. What about it? Show me what's his isolated power? Come on, what are we talking? You know, he hit .380, so of course his slugging percentage is going to be high. Oh yeah, his .300 ISO. Ooh,
that's true. No, he is. He's a little farther down. He's 33rd with a .255 ISO. Just behind Dan Vogelbach.
Dan Vogelbach is fun. Dan Vogelbach is like the quintessential quad A slugger. Bless him. In the rain, too, at Tacoma. Was that where he's playing? Is he still in the Mariners system?
I assure you I have no fucking idea, and I've already clicked away from
You were just looking at his fucking name.
I'm looking at a leaderboard. I'm not, you know... I don't know where the hell Dan Vogelbach was last year.
He is in the Mariners system. And last year, he played Mariners AAA, so Tacoma. The Tacoma Rainiers.
Yeah.
Anyway, good for him. Good on you, Dan Vogelbach. For whom are you riding? For whomst do you ride for in 2019? Is there an irrational guy that you're going to defend to the death that will be unfairly maligned by the hot takers of the world, and you will valiantly come to their rescue?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. I mean, just lost the one that I've been doing that for a couple of years, which worked out, you know, good way to end it for me. Especially if we don't pay attention to whatever the fuck happened to Morales in the last, like, 2 weeks of September there. which we won't. But I don't know if I have anybody in mind. I really want to see Thornton get out there. I'm very curious to see what he can do, and encouraged by the fact that they obviously liked what they saw there enough to have him start the year in the rotation, though obviously with a big asterisk on that. I don't know. Who are you ready to stand for? Who are you?
I have a lot of sweat equity carrying weight for Marcus Stroman.
Yes.
So I will continue to do so. But I can really see Ken Giles rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. And
the SI anonymous scout, the coded racism scout that was that blew up the internet for a bit today. Yeah, he does not like Ken Giles either. Thinks he might be a bit of a head case. I don't know where he got that idea. Probably from like one highlight pack on his TV.
Or could also be the Ken Giles potentially head case.
Could also be that. Yeah, could also be that.
Nevertheless, I am sure that I will be the kind of person who will make excuses for him, because he's a closer, which when you on a bad team, so the rare win that he has the opportunity to lock down, when he does, should he fail to do that, it'll feel like extra scrutiny, and it'll be like, oh, that fucking Giles is awful. He can't do this. Or if he's not pitching well in a save situation, whatever it is, especially as Charlie Montoyo starts to get fancy with his bullpen and won't be using it in a traditional way, I assume. So I'm sure that I will end up making an unbelievable amount of excuses for Ken Giles when he in fact does pitch poorly, when he gets, you know, lit up every so often as he's a mortal pitcher. That's going to happen. So I feel like Giles will be the guy that I'll end up riding for.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Because there is a chance that he may not be perfect in save situations and extremely awful in all non-save situations again this year.
Fingers crossed. And one more question. Who are you excited to be wrong about? Is there anyone who you've already kind of made up your mind and would love to be swayed in another direction?
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Rowdy Tellez is one that I definitely don't see it. I mean, when Morales got traded, a lot of people were, you know, oh, this opens up a spot for Rowdy, and one, no, it doesn't, and two, it's like, really? Like, I mean, it's a great story. He's got a great name. He seems like a nice kid. Everybody really likes him. And he's been through a lot, and I'm not rooting against him, but just I don't think he's answered the many, many questions as a prospect that are over him. And I don't think that, you know, a nice little bit of the second half in Buffalo and then a good, you know, batted ball luck run in his cameo in the big leagues last year is enough to change that for me. Though I know that obviously, for those who aren't following what Rowdy Tellez is doing, Tellez, however I'm supposed to fucking say it, which is, you know, I should probably get that straight. That's a nice thing to pronounce people's names right. Nonetheless.
Listen, the guy they pay to talk about the games, to call the games every day doesn't bother with it. Why would you?
Yeah. So I think that's the guy. I would love to be wrong about that, but I still don't see that yet.
I obviously would love to be wrong about Aaron Sanchez.
Yeah, you should be. I'm right about Aaron Sanchez. He's going to be awesome. He's back.
I am not wrong about Aaron Sanchez, but I would love to be wrong about Aaron Sanchez. And the other guy is Lourdes Gurriel. who I do not hold in a particularly high esteem. I am not that I dislike him or rooting against him, same sort of thing, but a lot of the same rationale you laid out for Rowdy, I am like, really, I've got, it's like when you go to see a band and you just kind of stand there with your arms crossed and you're kind of like trying to figure them out, like, that's me with Lourdes Gurriel.
The poor man's Javi Baez, come on.
He is, listen, you keep Javi Baez's name out of your mouth when you're talking about Lourdes Gurriel. Javi Baez is like the most exciting player in the game.
He's pretty awesome, yeah. That's why I'm saying the poor man's.
The very, well, the man who plays in the Blue Jays for whom the highest paid player is fucking Kevin Pillar, that kind of poor man.
Look, they both, you know, Gurriel has some power, I think, to still tap into, but maybe not 40 home runs or whatever Baez hit this year, but they're both the high strikeout, low walk kind of guys, versatile guys. You know, he's got that pineapple head thing going on that he does. It's going to be a bobblehead. Don't sell Gurriel too short. Just sell him for maybe, you know, 30 cents on the Javi Baez dollar.
I'm still taking a pretty big hit there. there's some real juice. That's the thing. There's juice on Javi Baez. And I don't know if I see the same kind of juice on Lourdes Gurriel.
No, maybe not.
Yeah, so that, it would be nice to see him round into a well-rounded player, you know, to see him really look the part. And lots of hits and things like that were nice, but I will remain impassive at this time. Like, but my hope is that I will be wrong about Lourdes Gurriel, and then they can trade him. And let Bo fucking Bichette come and play every goddamn day. That's what I hope for.
Also, yeah, that would be nice. I think, you know, I think you can move Freddy Galvis out of there, perhaps, as well.
That'll be fun.
His name I'm going to mispronounce as well.
That'll be fun. Freddy Galvis. In reading about some stuff about Fernando Tatis, they talked about Tatis' defense being like, it won't be as good as Freddy Galvis, because nobody is. Which is an underrated thing to have like an insane, you know, just a vacuum, like a Dyson handheld running around at shortstop. Birds All Day brought to you by Dyson, the finest vacuums in all the land. But that is a really fun thing to find. Also, as a side note, I was talking to someone, a former Blue Jays employee today. I worked with the team for a long time. And we got talking about John McDonald. And he said, John McDonald is not only one of the nicest people I've ever met in baseball. He's like, he might be the nicest person I ever met in my entire life. That like, the prime minister defense thing and how everyone like has held him in such a high regard. He's like, there's no way to oversell what a quality person he is. So, and then I was thinking my head about how Johnny Mac saved, and I know you've said it many times, but how Johnny Mac saved those awful teams.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He would just steal somebody's job, and it was like, hell yes, John McDonald every day.
Yeah.
So,
was it 2000, Royce Clayton in 2007, where it was like, he just looked awful, and Johnny Mac played, you know, 107 games or whatever the hell it was, and just every day made it, you know, as somebody who at that time had a star pass and was going out to the ballpark fucking probably every day or close to it, just gave you a gift every time that made it worth showing up.
And Eckstein as well. Remember when Eckstein handed a job to him?
Yeah, yeah.
And Johnny Mac ended up playing a bunch of that year too.
Yeah.
Johnny Mac, John McDonald, deservedly one of the most beloved Blue Jays. Not the best, but God, just so much fun to watch. And those awesome, that insane Father's Day home run. And then I'm so stupid of me. But like the whole thing with John McDonald, how they kind of kept him around to let him get his 10 years of service time. I don't know. I just like, I'm like, oh, look, a good thing that happened within the business of baseball. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Right, yeah.
And yeah, so that's it. Let's close on that. Let's close on John, everyone's fuzzy memories of John McDonald. Hopefully you can go and find that video of Johnny Mac on Father's Day. And maybe have a little cry, you know? Tomorrow's opening day.
Yeah.
Get all in your feelings. Get all in your feelings, because tomorrow there's going to be an enormous flag, and there's going to be pomp and circumstance, and there's going to be Mark Stroman on the hill. I'm excited. Are you excited?
Yeah, I actually am. Yeah, it's. I mean, this is. I remembered. I don't know if you guys remember 2018, but that season was fucking awful. That was just like, you know, by mid-June, it's like, okay, if I'm playing on career mode, it's like, just skip all these games, sim all these games until next year. This is ridiculous. And you know, they don't really have much that they're playing for, but yeah, it's going to be much more entertaining. My God, it's going to be much more entertaining. You know, there's going to be base running and four-man outfields and all that shit. That's going to be quite interesting. Seems like opening day is very close to a sellout at this point, which is interesting. There's not a lot of those blue dots left over, so I'm curious to see how that goes, because that was obviously a thing that for quite some time has been a bit of a story, sort of a small story. Though I did hear something. Somebody emailed me and was like, yeah, Rogers had changed it so that employees could use their discount on opening day and Canada Day this year. And I don't know if that change happened, you know, recently to help fill out some empty sections or what, but I will say that if they start talking about the high revenue, that maybe that's something to be considered, and it's something that I am going to perhaps explore. Though also perhaps I will be like, what are you going to fucking Woodward and Bernstein this completely pointless thing? Somebody's probably going to be like, yeah, no, they did that, whatever. But yeah, I don't know. So it'll be nice. It would have been understandable, yet slightly pathetic if there were big swaths of empty seats on Thursday. So hopefully not, and hopefully, you know, we see some fun baseball.
Yeah, one thing we didn't talk about that we can talk about whenever is Mark Shapiro was speaking about the stadium and changes that they're making inside the Rogers Center. The sort of specter of the Rail Deck Park was sort of floating again.
That was a thing,
which is
sure.
Obviously a bit of a pet prod, not pet prod, something that's near and dear to my heart. I think it's a great idea. But we won't talk about that today. We can save that for whenever. We can wait till May when all this slight veneer of optimism is wiped away and we're miserable again. So, but enjoy. If you're listening to this on Thursday, and hopefully you are, enjoy opening day. Enjoy the pomp, the circumstance, the music, the whole thing. Baseball is back. I'm excited. He's excited. His name is Andrew Stoughton. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we will talk to you next time for the first regular season episode of 2019 of Birds All Day.